kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Just fine?
Fine. I mean, I could be worse than fine, so I'll take fine. It's a fine thing to be.
Take the wins when you could get them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Were we supposed to interrupt? I kept thinking somebody else was going to pipe up and then just like, no. Shit.
No one else was introduced yet, Cole.
Well, that doesn't stop them any other motherfucking time.
Fine. Shocking penis. There, you happy?
No, now we're going to get demonetized.
Well, oh, yeah. Again. Shucks, there goes our 15 cents.
So much for throbbing, sparked up members here.
This show sucks. Pernell Vaughn, Chris Taylor, you're both here. How are you guys doing?
Yo.
Doing okay. I gotta say, I'm doing fine. Though, my electric pleasure snake's not doing so great, though. But I'm just gonna come up with various ways to say that throughout the show. It's gonna take some work, but I got it in me to pull it off. I can do this.
Speaking of taking the wins, I just won the Crossing Cup. Yay!
Yay!
All right. Now you went on 200cc.
Was it a shock?
It was a shock to you.
It was an important question I had to ask.
Dun, dun, dun. Who are you asking?
You!
Oh, what about...
You won the course!
I heard two voices at once. I couldn't tell which was at me and which was not.
Do you hear the shit? Nobody ever fucking pays attention. I go back to doing what I was. What was I even doing? Get out of here.
Feels like she's doing that thing they do on TV when the person just walks off angrily talking to themselves, getting in my face. Tell me what I know how to do and kiss my ass. I'll tell everybody. You put you in the face, you swab members, whatever. I do what I want.
I love those people.
That's basically me 90% of my life.
You gotta do like Norg and how he just starts screaming and walks away from the microphone, slams the door.
It's so hard for me to walk away, though. Here, let me roll away.
Just roll away.
Fuck, oh yeah. Okay, I'm back.
Occasionally yelling at the kids for something, and they're sitting there just getting scolded, and all of a sudden she starts walking away, yelling in the distance. The kid's like, what? What the heck's going on? Like, just take it and leave. Let's go.
I'm horribly guilty for that. I really am.
Suspend it again? My God, we feed you, we clothe you, give you a place to sleep. And this is how you repay it. Where'd she go? We're over here.
At this point, my kids are old enough to not give a fuck about anything I say anymore.
That's when you gotta get creative. You gotta start making them answer riddles for their dinner. That'll get back on track.
Speaking of getting on track,
you must answer me these riddles three.
Pernell, I had a question for you. I know we have had many a soda discussion on the show over the years. Have you tried cherry vanilla Coke yet?
Nope, because I'm determined to not drink it unless it's the zero sugar one. I'm not doing the free calories, and I have seen it on the shelf, but they haven't had zero sugar. They advertise them both, but they only have the normal one with its 260 calories per bottle. So I was like, you know.
Worth it.
No. It's no. Yeah.
Just go do some squats or some shit. I saw you talking about that on Facebook anyway.
You know how many squats that shit takes? I ain't got that in me, damn it. That's just work.
You won't find it today.
This donut, you know how many squats it takes to get rid of a donut? Too many.
Donuts are gross. Pop is better.
You know how many mountain climbers it takes to get rid of a diet, Dr. Pepper? None, because it's diet. But we don't know the actual long-term ramifications of diet beverages, so is the Health Association, so we're just right with that.
I want to know Cole's issue with donuts.
That was a very articulated outburst.
Yeah, I don't like donuts at all. I'm not a big cookie person either. I just don't particularly like sweets.
But donut. So soda is sweet, carbonated sweet. That is what soda is. That is it.
And I drink diet. I drink diet.
That's still sweet as aspartame.
Well, I know that, but I mean that's the extent of my sweet.
But you draw the line as sweet breads.
Yeah.
How? Why?
Same. I don't know. It's just not. Like, I decide if I like savory food better, and if I'm going to be fat, which I am, but if I'm going to be fat, I'm going to be fat off of, like, pizza.
Donut, one of those, like, delicious pods with, like, sweet pork in it. It was like a freaking, like, pork bun or whatever. I don't know. It's good enough. It's close enough to a donut. You should eat that. It can be good.
I mean, let me ask you a question.
42.
No, this is not the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe.
I know.
So that does not apply here. But
three?
If you had a choice to eat donuts and cookies,
mm-hmm.
or you could eat beef and broccoli and sesame chicken, which would you pick?
First of all, how is that even a question? That's two totally different schools of food.
Okay, but not to me. Like, I could totally throw away.
So you're basically saying choice between sweet pastries and Chinese food.
Savory food, but yeah.
Yeah, you named Chinese. So in this regard,
trying to keep it in the same. I mean, I could have said, I could have said pizza. And I did say pizza earlier. If I'm going to be fat, I'm going to be fat on pizza. But I mean, I would just far rather have savory food. But for that matter, I'm a salad eater. I love, like, give me spinach with vinegar and tomatoes and stuff. I'm happy as a pig and shit.
Yeah, salads are better than I used to give them credit for, I'll admit. Though I'm also weird with my salads. I get really picky.
I mean, they ain't healthy when I'm done with them, but they start off with spinach. It was like,
I ain't healthy with my salad. I'll start with spinach, put a glob of ranch on there, some freaking candy-coated honey-fried battered chicken, just slap it all over that salad. Fuck, just get the spinach out of there. We don't even need that. Make the salad ranch. Ranch base.
Take it back. You can't say bad things about spinach.
Oh, I love spinach.
Spinach is a goddamn superfood. It is incredible.
Oh, spinach is great. Well, I'm just laughing that you say, you know, it's not, my salads aren't healthy when I'm done with them. Like, what do you do? Just, like, start out with the spinach.
But I make a lot of, I like sour foods, and I will look for any excuse to consume vinegar.
No,
and a salad is a really good excuse to consume a lot of vinegar.
So you do balsamic vinaigrette?
Yeah, I do like that.
Good choice. You're back on the win.
I love balsamic vinegar. And, like, I literally have bottles of balsamic vinaigrette. Not vinaigrette, balsamic vinegar. Just in the cabinet.
Shotgun it.
David says he won't give me a kiss if I do that.
What you gotta do is do it, not let him know you did it, and then once he's at the office, gotcha.
Yeah! Like, he told me that shit was grounds for divorce.
I was talking to her in the kitchen. She said some shit about wanting to suck face, and I was like, I guess. The next thing I do, I got a mouthful of balsamic, and she's got this laugh. I can't get it out of my head.
He can catch me too. He can smell as soon as I pop up in a bottle, and he's like, "Nah."
Oh, hell no!
Yeah,
out of the house. I'm just like, no. Why would you?
One
do
of my
this
favorite snacks in the world is pickled eggs.
Oh no! Yeah.
Well, look, pickled quail eggs. It's one of the best things you'll ever eat.
Where the hell are you getting these mythical quail eggs from? You're not your grocery.
Quails don't exist.
I've never seen a quail in my life, except for Doug. Doug is the only quail I've ever seen. He ain't laying no eggs.
Oh my god.
So I don't know what to tell you there, but I am confused.
You're confused. Why?
Get the quail eggs. Where are you getting them?
From quail ass.
Oh, I don't want to visit that grocery store ever.
You want to go to
quail ass? You want anything? Nothing.
Did you hear they're opening a quail ass in town now?
Quail ass.
I'm totally going to open a restaurant. Yes, I'm going for some eggs.
Yeah.
God.
No, I'd love to raise my own quail, and, I like to but go I haven't to been able to find anybody. No.
Aldi would have some nice hipster quail ass. You get the good shit there. Get it in.
Aldi's quality quail ass since 1943.
I'd be a lot happier if you could find quail eggs and quail ass at the grocery store. You have to grow that shit for yourself.
I was like, Chris just told you they got that Aldi. Got to get them up.
They don't go. We ain't got no Aldis here. The nearest one's 2 hours away.
I'm nuts.
It's an hour to go to Walmart.
Guess you just stuck with Maldies. But
Maldies.
What is sure wrong with you people?
Clearly, with coal, it's the quail ass addiction, but we don't speak of that anymore.
Well, it's a forbidden topic. It's against the SMLTOS.
You all are such people. I gotta say, it's amazing to sit and think about that. Like, I legitimately look forward to these ridiculous conversations. They're a good time. And between the hollas, the laundries, the quail ass, the non-distinct chatter, it's a good time every time. Even when I'm tired. Especially when I'm tired, because when the most insane ramblings come out. So, always a play. Joe's like, yeah, I guess you guys are okay. You're adequate.
No,
like,
I'm saying you guys are insane. I'm just agreeing that you guys are insane.
First of all, don't try to disclude yourself.
Oh, no, I fully admit I'm crazy with you.
All right, okay, just making sure, try to step back. Like, yeah, you guys need to be committed. I'm going to call them on you. You go to the shit, to the white coats. I'm going to sit here and drink this Coke.
The hardest part for me is trying to somehow take, you know, these beginning 10, 15 minutes or so and sum it up into a paragraph. That's the hard part for me. And with these episodes.
Is that why you started making Jacob do that?
No, he just does the tweets. I still do the actual write-ups.
Oh, you poor bastard.
Yeah. SML. Cole goes to quail ass while Pernell doesn't chug a cherry vanilla Coke and Chris plays Mario Kart.
With the sound off so nobody can hear it.
I love how you'd have to have that specific part added to it. With the sound off. I'll have you know we were professional about it.
I wonder how the mic picks it. Turn the volume all the way up. See how the microphone picks it up.
Oh my God. All the way up? I don't think I could do that, but I'll turn it up enough where I can hear it.
No,
my TV gets really loud, so.
Hey, nice. Sells beach.
I won.
That's what really matters.
Who's your character that you typically drive as, by the way?
Dry Bones. I literally was not interested in Mario Kart 8 until they announced Dry Bones as a DLC character for the Switch version only, and then I bought the Switch version that day.
I used to wreck.
Yeah, the Switch version has Dry Bones. I used to wreck Mario Kart DS with Dry Bones. Dry Bones and the Dry Bomber, I could even beat the kids in Japan.
Wasn't he like the one that everyone used once they broke the game?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, I'm right there with him.
He's like, I'm just saying, I'm included in that group of people. I'll have you know.
Yeah, he's a fantastic character. He's great in Mario Kart 8 as well. Even but though I don't have, I'm trying to unlock the Dry Bomber. I hope it's in here. I don't know if it is. I've just been racing and unlocking stuff and playing with some friends online sometimes. Have y'all ever used the Nintendo like Switch Online app on the phones?
No,
I did it once.
It's really good,
but I can't. It just doesn't.
I think you might be the only person I've heard say that.
Yeah,
I like it.
The problem with it is that you shouldn't have to use a sub product or like a secondary product to do something that the system is totally capable of doing.
No, like, I like it though because
why?
Because
like why?
Okay, so I'm gonna get my little laundry list of reasons.
You got Pernell's attention with the laundry list.
are we talking bleach? Are we using fabric softener on this laundry list?
I mean, you know, I might add it.
Oh, might
do some fabric softener. Get the cottons feeling nice.
Yeah.
Anyways, but we got to separate the cardigans. They cannot shrink. So here's the thing about the app is that Well, it uses your phone, and everybody has a phone. So, you know, if you're at home playing your Switch, then it's totally fine to use your phone to chat with people. I mean, I'm doing it right now, pretty much. You don't have to purchase a piece of, like, headgear for the Nintendo Switch, and you know that, like, you know, Sennheiser's not chomping at the bit to make headphones for, like, the Switch, so they're not ever going to be good ones. You know, Turtle Beach is bad enough. And they, you know, I don't even think they'll do anything for Switch. So, like, you can use your own headphones. If you have nice headphones, you can plug them into your phone or whatever. The other thing is that the app is, like, super good. Like, you turn it on, and you go to the room, you sign in with your Switch account, and as soon as your friends are in the same game as you, they are also in the call. There's no thing that you have to do with the phone. Like, they're just there, and then they're in the call. And, like, that's great. And,
So you're basically saying that if you're playing Mario Kart 8, and I'm logged into the app, and I just boot up Mario Kart 8, it just throws me into your chat room.
If you join my room in the game, yes. Because if I start an online room and you're in it, then you'll also join the call if the app knows that you're on.
Oh, but I have to be in the room, in the general chat room.
Yeah, it doesn't just add you to my phone as soon as you log on or anything like that. No, you have to do the same stuff, like, you know, joining a room and whatnot. But, like, yeah, it's a good app and it works well. And I just like that it uses your phone and not, like, tacking on, like, all this extra software and hardware onto your already hardware-ridden Switch. Like, I have, like, 10 controllers for this thing. Like, well, I don't need other...
That's a you problem, honestly.
Yeah. But, like, if I just want to, like, set my phone out, like, just out on the desk, you know, without any headsets, I can just sit there and talk to, like, my speakerphone, and it's totally fine. And I did that with two friends yesterday, and it worked super well, and I was actually surprisingly... I was surprised by how... smooth the functionality was.
Do you end up plugging it in while you're doing it, or you just, like, let it ride till the power dies up?
I actually played for about an hour, and just with the battery on, and it took about maybe 9% of my battery, and my battery is not that good. Mm. But you can just let the phone, like, idle, like the screen will turn off and it'll still be working.
That's good. I know that was a problem when it first came out, was the screen needed to stay on.
Oh.
Ooh, yeah. I don't remember that. That sounds terrible.
Okay, so there's another second part of that, is that it kind of takes out, like, the responsibility of, like, for Nintendo to, like, have to be, like, you know, if people are being bad on the phone or whatever, like, they're doing it through a separate ad that, you know, and not the actual game. I don't know. I feel like there's, like, a little bit of a separation there that I think pleases Nintendo, because, you know, they resisted doing voice chat at all for a long time. So, I don't know. I feel like it satisfies all parties. I can't think of a reason why you would need to have this whole separate app running on your Switch to, like, just do voice chat while playing Mario Kart.
So, to not need a completely separate device for that completely separate app?
The thing I find hilarious, though, of all the things you just mentioned, you didn't mention the one thing that I always was okay with in regards to it.
What's that?
The price difference. So, by virtue of them being like, we don't have voice chat on our system or whatever, it's like, whether this was the reason why they did it or not, but the fact that the Nintendo Switch Online is like bupkis, like with $20 or $25 instead of the usual $40 to $60,
yeah.
I'm okay with it. Further come made better by the fact that they have that weird family plan thing, which makes it cheap as shit. I pay $5 a year for it.
Yeah, I do too.
And I'm I can't complain about that.
Yeah, I have the family plan as well.
I was going to learn that. It's just like, yes.
But yeah, like, the app's free. And, you know, like I said, everybody's got a phone. So I have no complaints. It's fine if other people do. But I actually really like that it's separate, because that's the other thing, is that you aren't forced into it via the game. Like, you can't just, you don't have to tell the game you don't want to voice chat. Just don't load up the app.
No.
I don't think any game really ever forces you to, like, determine, like, voice chat. You just boot up and you choose if you want it or not. But if you don't want it.
I guess so.
Well, no, there's a lot of online games where you jump into the game and you just hear voices already from different people on different teams.
Yeah,
no.
So I can understand wanting it to be, hey, shut the fuck up until I'm ready for you.
Also, well,
I guess that's a good point too, because I remember when Splatoon 2 came out. That was the time where I did attempt to use the app. And what I remember saying and laughing about with my friend was like, "I like the fact that I can boot this up and not hear you dumb dark bitch. Mm. What are you doing here, Blackie?" Random racial slurs as you tend to hear in large online lobbies. Like, I don't need this mess. I just want to beat people up with a freaking paint roller and be done with it.
Literally, me and my friends, we get into the little hub and we're all talking to each other on our phones, but we're also making our Miis say, "I'm using tilt controls" at each other constantly.
I'm sure they love that.
No, yeah, that's my favorite thing is just to spam "I'm using tilt controls."
Why?
Because it's fun and in joking. It's just such a nonsense phrase to have in there. The other one is, as soon as I join a room, I like to say, "This is my last race, guys." Because that's an option.
Well, it's like an auto statement. This is my last race.
Yeah, these are just statements you pick from a list. This is my last race. No,
I'm retiring from the age of Mario Kart.
Yeah, no, there is one that's I'm quitting, or I'm, whatever. All kinds of things like that.
Oh, good God.
Also, I'm using tilt controls. Sorry, guys.
This is my last race. Cole, we got to get you into Mario Kart.
Yeah, but you're going to have to convince me to play the Switch.
What are you doing? I just thought you were cool because you like balsamic vinaigrette, and now you're telling me you don't like the Switch? What are you doing? I'm
not inclined to play it. It doesn't have achievements.
That is true.
The achievements are in your mind.
Well, I mean,
your
Minecraft does, and Ori does.
You're playing Switch. That's the ultimate achievement.
Damn right. Take it from Jammer Lammy. The achievements are in your mind. Just play the games. Feel good about what you did, and turn that fucker off. Honestly, fun fact, the Nintendo Switch is what got me to stop caring about trophies and achievements in the first place. Because originally I was like that too. I was like, it sucks. There's no achievements in this thing. And then I realized, why did I ever even care about them in the first place? Because I remember back when I got the 360 for the first time. And back then I was like, achievements, they don't make any damn sense. What the hell is the point of these things? And of course, as everyone does, when you get that first blink, 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 you're like, oh. That satisfying sound. I want to hear that more often. And then you start chasing the damn achievements. Didn't have value in them, but you still want them. And I got hooked on it too, until I didn't, because I was broken free from it with Switch.
Yeah, see, that was my problem, is that I didn't ever fall into that because I never had my own 360 or PS3. And, I only just got to where I started getting achievements on PS4 as of 2 years ago. So even now, I still barely care. I just never fell into it.
And, but if I don't have achievements, how's anybody going to know I did a cool thing?
Tell them.
Tell them on a podcast.
Yeah. Nobody believes the shit thing I say. Don't you guys realize this?
That's first thing. Because I did used to tell people that was originally that was my thought. This is the only really good thing about achievements. It's two things. One, it's the when they do them right anyway. When they give you different objectives than you would typically apply yourself to do. Basically just expands the game. Now beat this level without using the jump button. I can do that? Well, I guess you can. There's an achievement for it. So that gives you something to do. And, of course, the second thing was, it's the schoolyard conversation broken down into a list of things you can just read on someone's wall. So I like using it to compare my progress with others. But at the end of the day, between having the podcast and social media and all the ways I want to communicate with my friends, I can just say, "Yo, what game are you playing?" "Mama, Mama." "All right, I'm playing Mama, Mama 2. Yo, what'd you do?"
Mama's pretty good.
It's a great game, but Mama Jamma feel good. But you just discuss it with them. And then from there, it's like, "Hey, by the way, I just get this cool thing with my gun, and it's pretty awesome. I unlock a thing with it." Yeah, at the end of the day, the best thing you can do with achievements in anything, whether you have them listed on a system or not listed in the system, is have actual unlocks tied to them. And if you do that, you don't need a list for them. The unlock will prove you got it. And it's just fun to have the damn unlock because it makes the game more fun. So get on that, company. Make more unlocks in games.
We can't even get them to give us good achievement tiles and you want full-on unlocks. That ain't never happening.
Hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Achievement tiles? What's an achievement tile? I'm playing Switch.
You dick. Oh, my God. Speaking of playing the Switch, we got a lot of Switch games to talk about. Should we get to those?
I think we had better head.
Now that we're like 25 minutes into the show.
And Chris has turned into a robot.
Oh, my Lord. Pernell, did you take your vitamins?
I did take a few. That's why I don't have much time left. I took too many vitamins.
Took too many vitamins? Because
that's what I do, too.
Yeah, quote-unquote vitamins. They make me feel good.
They make me feel good. That is not how that song goes.
Not at all. But first game to talk about tonight is called Vitamin Connection, developed and published by WayForward, released February 20th on the Switch for $19.99. Co-pilot the capsule ship on a microscopic journey is Vita Boy and Mina Girl, or Mina Girl, battle bacteria to save the Sable family and the world. Pernell, tell us about Vitamin Connection.
I like that it also ends up becoming the world. But early on, anyway. Either way, Vitamin Connection is an interesting little game that, again, up until you mentioned it, I didn't even know the darn thing existed at all, let alone that freaking WayForward was behind it. So, of course, I was really interested in seeing what the heck was all about. And to be perfectly honest, I came away pleasantly surprised. There's not a whole lot to say about the game, but what I do say about the game is the meat and potatoes of it, being that for those who are familiar with a game called Kuren Rin, or Irritating Stick. The first name is really bangled up, but Irritating Stick for sure. If you remember either of those games, you will definitely know what this game plays like, because the idea behind it is that you are these vitamin payers, whose names I'm not going to say, because Joe took care of that mumble up for me.
Vita Boy and Mina Girl.
Such a Mina Girl. Oh, my God. Jesus. Anyway, those two pilot a capsule ship, which is used by, well, they technically fly it around, and when people need to take their quote-unquote vitamin, they just magically pull this thing out of the air because they happen to be there, and they pop it in their mouths, thereby ingesting them into the body so that they can take care of business. And they do so by way of the Irritating Stick gameplay style. This game itself auto-scrolls, and as it scrolls, your ship is piloted, and you have to use the left and right triggers and bumpers to turn the ship so that it can squeeze through various crevices and narrow passages and the like, and also occasionally dodge obstacles and the like. In addition to that, you get a laser gun, basically the vitamin beam, which can be used to shoot down enemy targets, occasionally shoot, I guess, like throbbing pulses on the side of the, like, the flesh walls. Let's just call them flesh walls. I don't know
what this is getting dirty, Pernell.
Well, hey. This, we can't all have throbbing members in our games like Coles can, but. This.
Could you at least make it about vampires so that we know what you're talking about?
Touche. But as you pilot the ship and you basically blast the vitamin laser to take things out, which, by the way, the vitamin laser has a stamina gauge, so you can't overdo it. You need to be smart about how you run it. But your overall goal on each individual level is to pilot the ship through these environments, fighting off bacteria, and getting to various quote-unquote vital points within the person's body. And when you get to those vital points, you try to purify them by way of a typical mini-game. And there's a bunch of mini-games in the game for the most part, some of which you unlock as you progress through the game. But they have a variety of ranges to them. My favorite one being the, like, it's called Wire Coaster, but it's essentially like that game you would play. It was like a little, like, toy people could play with, where it was like a, you put your finger in a hoop, and you had to kind of like move it through like a labyrinth of sorts and not touch like the part in the middle, like a line that goes in the middle. So you're kind of bouncing around like a cable that's electrified or whatever. But God, that sounds weird to describe. But essentially, you are bouncing around an electrified wire, and you want to move your two vitamins along the outer perimeter of it, from one end to the other without touching it. So. But it's a bunch of mini games like that. And as you beat those, you basically purify those vitamins, those vital areas, and eventually heal the person inside, or the person that possesses them. Now, there's a bit of a story that takes place through each of them, which is pretty much defined as a typical family. Think like how Mr. Mosquito did it, where it was like a family that you interacted with, and each of those family members ends up having issues with various malicious viruses, and then they have to take the vitamin ship to get healed. So that's pretty much how the game plays out. The game progression takes place. You get a cool little story element, you pop the pill, you meet some interesting NPCs within these various bodies, you take care of business, and then you get the heck out. And as you progress through the game, you also unlock additional little modules that will make the ship a little better and add new functionality to it, and which will also allow you to go back to previous levels to acquire various stars, which are hidden throughout the stages, which will help you unlock further things like additional mini games or various like stages within the mini games themselves. So honestly, the game is a great time. And I will say one of the biggest surprises that it provided to me, though, was the soundtrack. So the way they do the music in this game is they treat it sort of like a pop station that just kind of plays as you do the stages. And they even like, if you like, if, when you go from one song to the next, even just that thing like a radio station would do where it goes, Vitamin Connection, or whatever. And they switch over. And then it turns out that I don't know all the tracks in this game, but I do know for a fact that they're licensed tracks, some being very old and classic, but still good. And I know this only because at one point, a familiar riff started up at the beginning of a song. I was like, wait a minute, isn't that Biss? Which is a band I've liked since like I was like 20 years old. And they're still performing and everything. But there's like a song from Biss in this game that had me singing the song throughout the entire stage, well, until it stopped playing in the stage. But I was very pleased to hear that. And it made me interested in that much more. So I'm like, what other tracks might I happen to stumble across something that I might recognize? Because there's some good tracks here. And I wonder if Capsule is just another band I like from Japan. And if they are in the game, it would be pretty fitting for a game where you control a capsule ship. But the music in this game is legit. And I would love to come across an OST listing for all the tracks that they included in the game. But all in all, to me, this is a fantastic, like, revitalization of the irritating stick gameplay formula with some added personality and charm and good music. I enjoy it. I had a great time with it. And even I was even almost concerned that the game kind of progresses slowly as you scroll through stages, but you can just hold down two of the buttons on the face if you feel as though it's not going fast enough and it'll speed up. So you can kind of even control your progress, you know, let it go at normal pace and you need to finesse yourself through an area. Or just speed it up when you want to just blitz through a zone. It's a quality product.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awesome.
It is awesome. And it's the best part is that I had no idea it was going to happen until you mentioned it. So this is one of those cool surprises I like to talk about every once in a while.
Yeah,
this
kind of came out of nowhere.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Excellent work there, Way Forward. If you developed it, doubly excellent work. If you licensed it, good pull getting it over here. I don't know which one happened, but I'm happy with either.
I believe it was developed internally at Way Forward, I believe.
In that case, good work, gentlemen and gentle ladies. I salute you with my empty glass of tea.
All right, well, the next game to talk about is called Shadow the Ronin, The Revenge to the Samurai, developed by Gilson B. Ponce, published by LGS Productions, released January 28th on PS4 for $9.99. A legendary samurai of ancient capital Imperial was deprived and expelled from their lands, and all their family killed by the orders of the Emperor. After these events, he swore vengeance against his opponents until death. However, the Emperor, knowing of these plans, organized a group of ninjas, highly trained assassins, to defeat him. Thus begins a long and bloody battle in the Edo period. Chris, tell us about Shadow the Ronin.
You have to say the whole title. Shadow the Ronin, The Revenge to the Samurai. Okay, God, I am so glad I got to like try this game out, because I went down like this whole rabbit hole of like of weirdness with it. So the game itself is full of bad ideas and strange ideas and just a total lack of direction. So okay, You start the game after a lengthy cinematic credit sequence that just shows, you know, basic gameplay in the thing. And you see the name Gilson B. Pontes, or Ponce. I don't know if it's Ponce or Pontes. He's the one person who made the game. Yeah. However, he decided to go ahead and break down every available credit that could be possibly made from a video game and have his name be on there. Not in a list like credits would do if they were going to be lengthy. Every like one at a time, drops them in, right? Through this lengthy credit sequence, like I said, where every single credit is Gilson B. Pontes. And so you're like, okay, great. I wonder if Gilson B. Pontes had anything to do with this game.
Probably so not, but...
So you start it, and it looks good, by the way, from the intro. It's like it's got a neat art style. Lighting effects are actually pretty cool. You know, for a game that's on the cheap side, anyways. You start the game, and you start, and you kind of have your character ride a horse to the flame that will take you to the first level. The horse, there's no way to make it go fast. The horse will just slowly walk. And as you slowly walk, more credits appear, each one going to Gilson B. Pontes, including, by the way, lightning director. Not lighting. Lightning. As in That's thunder incredible. And. Yes. And you're suddenly, you know, as soon as you start walking on this horse, which, by the way, you're going to walk directly into a wall because the controls are just atrocious. You just start to notice things are a little off. So you move with this horse. Well, for one, not only do you, the game has no options, right? Absolutely no options. The only options are to restart or quit. That's it. There's no volume, there's no controls, there's no invert y-axis, and y-axis is set to, you know, the bad way. yeah, it's not that necessary, though, because there's no reason to look up or down in this game. Everything happens straight ahead. But, you know, while you're sitting there fiddling with the camera, you notice that if the camera hits something solid and gets closer to your character, it will just go right up to and including through the character and then stay there. So you could, I actually at one point was riding my horse to the first level with the camera on close enough to my back that it was blocking the entire view. I only was looking at my back and nothing else. The back was just moving left to right, and I just had to guess until finally the camera corrected itself. And then, you know, you like ride by these two ladies who are like wearing skimpy dresses, and they're just like arguing with each other, but there's no dialogue and no voice acting. So they're just motioning towards each other like a couple of Sims, just like being angry at each other. And that has nothing to do with anything, by the way. You just occasionally might see one or both of them like walking around a level, and you can't really do anything about that. Okay. Now the weird parts. So you get into this first level, and it takes you to some place in Japan at some year. Both are like so random that I didn't bother to remember a single one. It'd be like this place in 1847 or something. And you walk around. Again, it looks nice. The trees look nice. The grass looks nice. The water looks nice. You have two buttons. One, you know, you move around your character. You click in the stick and you'll run. He didn't bother to make any of the face buttons be a run button or toggle. The other is the right bumper. Not the trigger, but the bumper is your one and only attack button. So you walk around. There's no there are no words in this game besides Gilson B. Pontes. That's the only narration that I got out of this whole thing. and whatever setting that you're in. You walk around, and eventually, and I do mean eventually, you will see a little line come across the top of the screen, like a kind of Skyrim-style compass, except there are no directions, it's just a line, and on it somewhere is like a red X or a little dragon symbol. If you walk towards those, then you will eventually run into either a ninja or a dragon. A ninja is like the small enemy in the game. You just walk up and hit them once with the sword, with your sword, and then they will die immediately. Right. And yeah, and if they hit you with your sword, you will die immediately. We'll get back to that in a second. sorry, I'm actually trying to find something while I'm also Okay,
you're playing the game now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I was looking for a sound effect, because when the ninjas die, they make the most hilarious sound effect in the world. I'm going to link it later. I pulled up a gameplay video and got to a point where, and I timestamped it where a ninja dies. And I'll just find that after this review. But anyways, so you walk up and, you know, fight the ninja. The ninja, by the way, they spawn, I think, randomly on the map, and thus they could be at the bottom of a lake walking slowly towards you. And although when you enter the lake, you'll be swimming, they'll be down there walking. And, you know, again, they do nothing but walk slowly towards you and then pull out their sword, and then if you just wait too long, they'll hit you with it. However, dragons are a whole nother story, so... Oh, I forgot. There actually is a second button. The circle button, you do a roll, like a Dark Souls style roll, but it's not Dark Souls. So you go up to a dragon, and the dragons actually look pretty cool. I liked them. If the dragon hits you once, of course, you're dead. You have to hit, I don't know whether you have to hit this dragon multiple times or if I just missed all the time with my tiny ass sword. Because there's no indicator, there's no feedback whatsoever as to whether you've hit the dragon or whether you've done damage. Just eventually, I got a dragon to die. And, meanwhile, the dragon has like 3 or 4 different moves that it can use much faster than you can. So you basically have to like get as close as you can to it, attack, you know, hit the attack button once and then roll away and hope that you connected. What happens when you defeat all the ninjas and all the dragons? I have no idea. I never got anything to happen in this game, but I'll tell you what happens when you die.
What happens?
Oh, God. So, if anything manages to kill you, and many things will, again, one hit and you're dead, and there's no armor or healing or anything like that. There's none of that. You just walk around until you kill or be killed. You then are instantly transported to this tiny island in the middle of an ocean or something, or a lake. There's 3 Christian crosses in front of you. I have no idea why. This is supposed to be Edo era Japan, and it gives you a year. It's like 1230 something, and you're in a different place. You have to get in the water and swim to an island where there's like all these different little triangles on your compass. You have to get to one of those triangles, and each one will teleport you to a different level. Not the level that you started in, but just a different level, and then you get to try again. And here's the thing, your character's not very fast at swimming, and those things are placed a painfully long way away. So every time you get hit in this game, and I have timed this both for myself and through other gameplay videos. By the way, all the gameplay videos available of this game have never beaten a level. I watched all of them. None of them can do it. It's just dudes complaining about how bad the game is, which is what I'm doing right now.
Damn.
It takes 3.5 to 4 real ass minutes to get to another level to try again on anything. And like minimum, like that's if you start running as soon as you spawn in this place and then start swimming across the water, 3.5 to 4 minutes of watching your character swim. And then you get to try again. I was amazed. I was appalled. I was like utterly laughing my head off at this game. I was like, I could not believe it. And especially that it, like, kind of looks good. Like, this guy's got a good eye for, like, character design. I like the look of the dragons. I had to know more, so I looked up Gilson B. Pontes. And that's where things got real weird.
You mean it gets weirder?
A little bit.
Fucking hell.
So.
I'm so invested in this review.
According to IMDb, Gilson B. Pontes is a director, producer, writer, composer, editor, and video game designer. Known for Shadow the Ronin, Samael, The Legacy of Ophinoctus, Sword of Fortress of the Onimusum, and Spear of Destiny, The Kaiseki. He has made 4 games since 2017, and this is just the 4th one. This is just the one that came out this year. I looked up every single one of those games. They're the exact same game.
Really?
This guy, yes, they're all the same, like, it's just different looking characters. So one of them looks like a medieval knight, one of them looks a little more, I guess, ninja-like, one of them's like a ghost guy. One of them has the exact same dragons as this game. He just cut and pasted the dragons from one game to the other.
I wonder if they're just like Unity assets or something.
Maybe. But like this guy, you know, just completely by himself, just made the same game 4 years in a row. And I can't believe it. This is like M. Dickey levels of like, who is this person I have to know? And yeah, every single one of them has, I think what the thing is this guy's just doing this stuff. There's two explanations for it. One, this guy, based on the fact that he credits himself 45 times in every single game and forces you to watch him, because you have to walk through the credits, either he is just that, like, into himself and he thinks he's making, like, these really good games that people just don't understand or whatever. And he does have his fans. I've read YouTube comments. Some people actually defend these things. Or the fact that like every single title that he's released has like, you know, prior to this one, cause this one just came out, but there's like a lot of like video reviews of like, how did this get made? And, you know, like, oh, Jimquisition or something like that. Just like all these YouTube stars are like, look what I found. It's so bad and goofy. And it's like, I'm thinking people are buying this game based on bad reviews just so they can also laugh at them. And this guy's probably making bank on this.
Probably. And the best part of that theory is the fact that it is on sale until the end of March for $3.99.
Yes. So
for a game that cheap, I mean, that's the level that we give games, fuck it, why not? Like, it's only right. $4.
But at $4, here's the thing. Unless you are gonna buy it just to laugh at it, and you believe that this guy is just, like, a Tommy Wiseau of, like, making video games, and that you wanna, like, see it for yourself, okay, give him $4 and try it. But every other bone in my body gives this one a deny it, because I really think it's a little more cynical than that. But I will say, and I'm sure Gilson B. Pontes is going to be listening to this, dude, design for a team. Get with some people and make like a real game, because he's good at the art. He like actually makes compelling, looking backgrounds, arts. He's good at lighting. Mediocre at like everything else, and just has bad ideas about how to implement it all. It's like, dude, get with some people that can make a video game and make something good. You can do it. Like, I totally believe in this guy. Or not. I don't know. Either way, I'm going to be checking out these other three games. I'll let y'all know what I find.
Well, I'm interested in hearing more, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Or not. I had to do it. It was so there.
It was there. But next game to talk about is called Under Hero, developed by Paper Castle Games and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati. It released February 11th on PS4, 14th on Xbox One for $16.99. Coming out later on this month to the Switch, Under Hero is an RPG platformer where the chosen hero has failed and an underling of the evil king reluctantly takes his place as the new hero. Use timing-based combat to defeat enemies as you venture across the land, face off against quirky bosses, and save the Chestnut Kingdom from your own evil boss, Mr. Stitches. Purnell, tell us about Under Hero.
Ah, Mr. Stitches. I like that name very much. And he's actually a stitched-up monster. It's kind of nifty that way. Under Hero is one of those games that, well, I was curious about it because, well, I like Digirati stuff in general. It also just kind of prompted an inquiry because I like the idea of when games have you play as the quote-unquote villain character, whether it's because you're turning on your boss or turning on your original goals or whatever. I like games that do that. And this game does that in a very hilariously tongue-in-cheek manner. So the game starts out with you controlling, this isn't really a sport, it's literally the beginning of the game. The game starts out with you controlling the fully souped-up hero character as he's progressing through the castle in order to stop the evil Mr. Doctor, Mr. Stitches, and save the princess. But an underling group gets the drop on him, crushing and killing him with a chandelier. And unfortunately, of the minions, only one of them survived the attack. And that minion got full credit for defeating the hero. But in the process of looting the hero's corpse, he kind of loots the sacred talking weapon that the hero was using. And through a series of really odd events where the villain asks the new main character to return the items of power that the hero found back to the minions that he stole them from. Instead, what happens is he is convinced to progress on a mission to hopefully stop Mr. Stitches and save the world after all.
It is an interesting premise, which leads to some fun slapstick dialogue. Because as you progress this game, when you come across various enemy characters, any enemy in the game, you are welcome to chat with them, like have a little dialogue. Like that's pretty much where all the conversation comes from. You don't go to towns and talk to the humans. You actually go to, you know, your boss's castle and talk to his various minions. You fight monsters in the field, but before you fight them, you're allowed to have conversations with them and get various hints from them or just general dialogue. And if you don't want to fight them even, sometimes you can just say, here's some money, leave me the heck alone. And they'll go, sure, catch you later, chump. But in the event that you don't want to go through that process and you do want to do battle with them, and let's be real, you're a hero. Of course you want to do battle with them. You then proceed to go into the actual combat. And combat in this game is very reminiscent of the classic Super Mario RPG, in that it is not turn-based, it is timing-based, based around stamina and activity. So combat is essentially a stamina bar, and when you're playing it, the enemies will attack you using various tells. The tells could be, I don't know, something like a head bobbing left to right, which will indicate a certain attack coming at you from one of two or three levels. When the attack comes, you can either duck it, jump it, or block it if you get the shield item. And that is pretty much how you defend yourself. And if you do proper timing, like pretty good timing, you'll also get a bit of a boost to your stamina gauge. And what does that stamina do? Well, it allows you to strike back and do damage. You're allowed to use your various attacks. You pretty much have like a sword and a slingshot weapon that you can use to do damage to the opposing enemy. Also, I think about it, another weapon. But anyway, point is you get those two. And you basically do damage back. Now, by default, you'll do normal damage based on whatever your attack power is, but though I never really quite got truly good at it, you also do more damage if you're able to hit the enemy to the beat of the music. So if you swing your attack on the beat of the song, you'll do bonus damage, and you'll get an indicator in the next to the enemy's head. It's showing that you clearly nailed the damage buff. The game has a pretty cool rhythm on the combat, and I greatly enjoyed it, because again, that was honestly why I found myself enjoying the Paper Mario games, too. I do wish enemy variety was a little bit better in the different zones you go to, but overall, I was pleasantly surprised and pleased by it. But worlds in this game also, now I think about it, it's worth mentioning, it's not a like sprawling world, so to speak. Think of it like, I guess also like Mario. You start in the hub being the castle, and then you progress to the individual zones by way of portal holes in a certain area of the castle. So you'll jump into the hole, go to world one, and then you'll jump and come back when you do a few events. You'll jump into the next hole, go to world two. You can always go back to these worlds and find new stuff that you may have missed, various secrets or what have you. But for the most part, you're entering worlds which are 2D platforming exploration zones and pretty much just going about your business and having fun with them. And it, honestly, it's not a bad play. And when you're running around these levels, also, like Mario, you will find various floating coins and treasure chests that will also contain coins, which I guess Mario doesn't have, but whatever. You'll find treasure chests which have money in them. And when you take that money, it can be used to either bribe enemies, like I mentioned earlier, or it can be used to shop at a evil store back at the main castle to get various like passive perks, like the ability to carry more potions, which you use to heal your health and stamina in combat, or items that let you repair your shield when it takes damage, that kind of stuff. Nothing crazy. In fact, even leveling up in the game doesn't do anything crazy. You can either, when you level up from enough experience, you can either upgrade your hit points, your attack, or your stamina. Overall, the game itself is not all that difficult. It's just a fun game that's very colorful with fantastic music. And honestly, the humor is pretty peak. I had a multitude of moments where I openly laughed as I played through the game. Ultimately, I also think this is a quality title, worth a buy. I was expecting it to be okay, but I came away thinking this actually more so fun. The only real downside I could think of to it, though, is that combat can be a little loosey-goosey sometimes, like the controls. Like, it's not press the button, jump. It's not quick pace like that. There's a bit of floatiness to it sometimes, so it'll take some getting used to saying, I pressed the button, I made the jump. And as you get, once you get used to it, though, it's not such a big deal, but it has that starting point where it's not one-to-one like you'd expect. I rambled a lot there. And I hope I didn't disconnect the call. We still love you. You better, damn it. I sent you chocolates.
When did you send me chocolate? Wait, where's
mine? I didn't send cold chocolate. She doesn't eat that stuff.
That's good.
But I did mail you balsamic bitter garret cupcakes.
I would probably eat the shit out of it and be happy as a pig in mud.
Oh my god.
Balsamic vinaigrette mud?
Yeah.
You have problems. They sell that.
Balsamic vinaigrette problems? Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, Pernell, Underhero, do you have anything else to say about it, or are you ready to give us your verdict?
I think I can verticalize this.
Well, then for $17, what do you say?
Buy this Mamma Jamma. It's fun to play, and you'll like it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, too. I've been dabbling in with this one. I thought it was going to be more of a hack-and-slash game, so the turn-based rhythm combat kind of threw me off, but I really, really like it.
Oh, yeah. Like, did you ever play like any like the Mario and Luigi games or Paper Mario?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, if you played those, like, this, like, that's just worth sitting just out the door. Like, if you played any of those games.
Yeah, very reminiscent.
Yes, it's good stuff.
It is good stuff. But next game to talk about is called Cosmonauta, developed and published by Cubite Interactive, released February 11th on the Switch for 99 cents. During a space expedition, our hero experiences issues with the navigation systems on his ship, and now he needs to face the dangers of the unknown to find his way back. Chris, tell us about Cosmonauta.
All right, Cosmonauta. So this is a just a stage-based puzzle platformer. You are a little blue guy who just kind of gets thrown into the action here. And your job is to go from the start of the stage to an elevator at the end of the stage. You have one function, and that is to jump. Nearly everything in the stage can kill you. There's like, you know, there's like kind of passive enemies, like circular ones that just roll back and forth. And then there's like these, I don't know what they are. They're like, they look like space propane tanks. And propane accessories.
And, thank you, by the way. Thank
you. Damn they shoot it, out
like yeah. They shoot out like green you know, green fumes of some kind, and you have to dodge those. If you get killed, you have to actually, funny enough, or like interestingly enough, you don't start the stage over. You actually tend to start right, you know, there's like, you know, despite the fact that the levels are tend to be on the super short side, they actually do have several spawn points that are like, you know, there for you. So if you get through like one particularly nasty obstacle, the game's nice enough to not make you do it again until you get to the end of the stage. And yeah, the art kind of has this, it's a little bit of a, I'm going to say like, it looks like a DOS game from the like early 90s. but the controls are really nice and tight. You get these nice floaty jumps. And, you know, some things will help you, like there might be, and they're always like indicated by like some kind of arrow. So it'll be like arrows pointing in a direction will like fling you in that direction. An arrow pointing up will like make you bounce up really high. And yeah, it's just, you know, the game just gets progressively harder with the obstacles placement and things like that. You got to practice timing. Or in the case of those propane tanks, I noticed that instead of like, you know, making a huge effort to like learn the timing of like them and all that, you can actually just jump over them in most cases. I was stuck on level 20 for a long time until I just figured out to jump over the propane tanks and I was fine.
Nice.
But you know, sometimes the game will like auto fling into some spikes or something and it might take you like 3 or 4 tries to get through. But generally it's just a nice kind of, it's a little on the breezy side. I mean, there's 64 stages and it takes it about 20 stages to start getting really challenging. And then past that, it's actually a pretty, there's some pretty clever design principles in here, but nothing that you can't get through if you don't, if you beat your head up against it enough.
Yeah.
And the music is actually pretty cool. It's, kind of that, you know, I don't know, what do they call it? What do the kids call it? Vaporwave? Something like that.
Something like that.
Nice and synthy and kind of retro.
Goddamn kids with their, synths and
their iPods
and their
razor phones,
their avocado sandwiches, and
yeah, and their damn green propane.
Well, it seems it was a one person project. So, for a one person project charging $1, what do you think?
It's worth about 99 times the amount of Shadow of the Ronin, the Revenge to the Samurai. So, go ahead and pick it up. You know, it's nothing like too special. I did forget to mention there are jetpacks in it too, which are actually kind of frustrating to use, but you know, it's all part of the whole thing. Yeah, I actually think this is a worthwhile project for sure. I mean, there's nothing really bad about it. It's just kind of like, it's definitely good for a dollar. I'll tell you that much. So I'd say this is a good, you know, fuck it, why not? But also, I would say for fans of like the puzzle platformer, this is a good buy it. That'll get you through a couple, you know, an afternoon or two.
Yeah, I'm going to pick this one up. It's only a dollar. I like to support indies when I can, and it's nice and cheap, so why not support them?
Yeah, exactly. This is an indie worth supporting. I'd like to see something on a little bit of a larger scale that might from this person, because like they did some good work here.
Awesome. Well, moving on, we have a 4-pack of games from Forever Entertainment to talk about. Each of you got 2 of them to talk about. Chris, we're going to start with you with Wanderlust Travel Stories, developed by Different Tales and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment. This one is coming out February 27th on the Switch for $14.99. Wanderlust Travel Stories is a bridge between literature and gaming. Step into the shoes of modern travelers, explore their desires, hopes, and fears, and shape how their stories unfold. Make this journey your own. Chris, what is Wanderlust Travel Stories?
All right. Well, Wanderlust Travel Stories is a Wanderlust? I don't know. It is a visual novel with a little bit more interaction than one would normally get out of it. Not as much as Omen Exitio, whatever, but definitely more than like the ones where you just turn the pages until it's done. So this basically, so when the story starts out, it starts off on Easter Island, where a whole bunch of like tourists, you know, just travelers of different backgrounds and such, all happen to come together on this island. And your first role is as the kind of nameless, you know, observer of all these people. And through the initial choices that you actually make in the game, you kind of, you know, it's like, I noticed this person's hair. I noticed this person's eyes. And then from there, it might say like something else that you might have noticed about them. And finally, what you're doing is you're actually selecting your main character and what story, overall you're going to be reading and, reacting to. So, you know, you might end up as Martin, the German, like, traveler who goes to Thailand, or you might end up as Henry and Henrietta, a father and daughter, story that actually alternates between their stories, from chapter to chapter. And you kind of, and it all takes place in a, en route to Antarctica. And, you know, there's some others as well. And this actually gets into my one and only complaint about this whole thing. You can only have one story going at a time. That is, you can't start one character and then be like, I'd kind of like to see how this other character might go, or like, you know, I might try something different. If you do, you lose all the progress with your current story. No, so you have once you make the decision for a character, you have to follow that one through to the end of the game, or the end of the story rather, and then, you know, you can reselect at that point. Which, you know, is not that bad, but it's one of those things where it's like, I started the father-daughter story after Martine, and then I was like, well, I'm just going to have to start Martine all over again and see if I can remember what I said. Or, you know, maybe just do it all completely different. But the cool thing about it, so the way that it presents the story is that it just the words just kind of appear, and you can actually raise the speed of that somewhat. There's a text and a paragraph delay that happens. And sometimes, one thing that you have to kind of watch out for is that alongside these is a map of like the country where your story is taking place. And let's say you're traveling from one city to another. Well, it'll show like a little icon of your vehicle, like traveling slowly from one part to the other, and the text just kind of rolls in as you're watching this happen. You have to wait for the vehicle to get to a certain point before the next text appears, so you can't just like sit there and advance it. And if you just sit there and push the button, you might accidentally make a choice and then you can't, you know, really go back and unmake the choice. So I've done that more than once where it's like, you can do this thing or this thing. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even see what the choices were. And now I'm doing this thing. And, you know, there's no, like a lot of visual novels, there's no voice acting, there's no pictures of the characters. It's all done in text, against, like I said, a map. And the occasional photograph, like mostly showing, like, you know, the Antarctic ones just show like a picture of penguins if you're looking at penguins, or, you know, mostly like pictures of animals and buildings and like things, rather than the actual people. And, you know, it all has this score that just kind of, you know, just keeps going. It's this kind of meandering ambient music that makes for good reading music. I was not bothered by it, although I will say eventually I was listening to something else while I was. It was great to read while I was watching people on Twitch. So, you know, this is a game that you can play while listening to the SML podcast, just letting you know.
There you go. That's how to sell it.
Yeah.
You wily son of a bitch, yeah.
So, you know, just a couple more little features here. One that I actually like is the emotional state system in the game. So your choices in the game will actually have an effect on your character in two ways. One is that they have a stress meter, and the other is that they have a fatigue meter. So let's say, you know, you choose to, like, you know, a conversation is going badly and you just decide that you want to engage with it. That might raise your fatigue meter but lower your stress meter, or maybe, you know, and or if you choose to ignore them, it might lower your stress level or something like that. These aren't like factors that will end the game or anything like that. You can't stress yourself into a heart attack and die. At least I don't think you can. There's many different stories here. But, you know, like basically the higher it gets, like eventually it changes your character from, like, let's say, like the best, level, or, you know, if you had the lowest stress, then you're cheerful, but it might go into optimistic, and then it might go into, you know, energetic, and then it might go into sad or like despondent or something like that. And that will just affect the way your character reacts to everything in the story. And it actually, will show in a certain paragraph, or a certain choice will come up. It'll be an option that'll appear only if you're at a certain emotional level. So sometimes you'll get an extra choice in a thing that's based on the fact that you're currently calm, or you're currently optimistic or cheerful. So, you know, you kind of get to like manage your character's emotional state, and you get extra story options out of that. And that kind of guides the story in that direction. So you kind of like, if you decide that you want your character to be a sad sack, that will add some other options to the game. And if you decide your character wants to be calm and optimistic, then that will add some story too. And I actually really like that it does that. And, the other thing is that there's also a money system for certain stories. Like I said, if you play the German girl who's like exploring Thailand, she has a certain amount of money, and, you know, obviously some options will cost money, and you kind of get to manage that. Although I'm not sure that that's going to like ultimately, again, I don't think you can go broke with that character anyway. She starts off with $150,000.
Good God.
And I'm like, yeah, she's a white tourist. And really, like, some of the stories do read that way, unless you kind of, like, put them in the more stressful direction of being, like, you know, actually challenging your character to confront that, which actually some of the stories have that, so I'm pretty impressed there. The writing all around is really good, and I don't think I've seen a visual novel be this good about changing the story on the fly based on your character's emotional state. So I definitely found myself sitting down to this one for more than an hour at a time, you know, just sitting there going through the stories, at least before burning them, so that I could try another story for the purposes of review. But no, ultimately, like, this is one of the better examples of a visual novel I've seen on the Switch so far. So
your overall verdict at $15?
$15, I'm going to say it's a buy it. Just know that this is a story about traveling around the world, and thus a lot of it is just geography and people who are obviously rich or, you know, make a career out of traveling, talking about traveling. So, you know, it's not exactly high drama, but like they did a good job making this one compelling, even though I myself am not a traveler. So, you know, found very little to actually relate to here. And, you know, it actually contains some pretty interesting facts about the places where you're going. So you can learn a little bit as well. But yeah, just for the fact that this thing is so well put together and clearly has just a metric ton of text in it, you know, based on all the choices and all the ways you can read the story, I'd say definitely worth it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Sinless, developed by MGP Studios and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released January 23rd on the Switch for $9.99. Venture forth and discover the truth behind the seemingly perfect Omnicore society in Sinless, a unique point-and-click and visual novel hybrid set in an original cyberpunk reality. Purnell, tell us about Sinless.
Well, Sinless is a... Well, you already kind of mentioned it's a visual novel, point and click. But what you did mention is that this adventure is capped with fantastic visuals and glorious music. The gameplay focuses around a main character who it's hard to even really peg a scenario because he kind of just wakes up and goes through the process of just like going from point to point. But I guess the best way to start it by saying like he wakes up, he wonders where his girlfriend went, and he kind of goes on a journey to kind of look for her, which then leads down a bit of a rabbit hole into some interesting elements that leads him to wonder if the society he lives in is really what it seems. And this is done by way of going from environment to environment by having scenes where you can kind of move a cursor. You have like two cursors, the left thumbstick and the right thumbstick, and they move the cursor around to explore the environment, select and view various things, and kind of sort of just kind of examine what exists there. And every once in a while you'll get like dialogue describing things. You might find items you could pick up. And it's weird that I'm even describing it in this manner, because normally if I talk about a visual novel type game, I would give some element of context around what the actual synopsis is. Like, I won't give you the ending, obviously, but I would give you a bit more of the detail to what the game is. It makes it easier to discuss. But with this, it's kind of hard to do because the game itself is like 3 to 4 hours. It's really short. And it just kind of goes boop, boop, boop. So I have trouble even mentioning plot stuff because any plot element that you mention is like a good 25% of the game. But I guess worth mentioning is like a few things. One, did I generally enjoy the experience of exploring the game and going through the different story elements? I did, for the most part. I enjoyed talking to different NPCs and exploring the environments. And every once in a while coming across some pretty funny, like, game referencing dialogues. Just Dark Souls was a big one that pops up pretty early in the game that I liked. But there were a few weird elements that kind of irked me regarding the interface that's worth mentioning, being that it's a point-and-click game. Now, if you have a stylus or you just want to use your finger, you probably won't have to deal with most of this because you can just drag the screen, touch things as need be, and select objects. However, if you do that, the hiccup that you might face is the fact that sometimes it's hard to even tell what you're able to examine and what you can examine. I have had moments occasionally where a few like selecting targeting cursors would pop up and then disappear on the screen. But I honestly have no idea what was making those things show up in the first place. So I couldn't regularly make them appear to show me what could I not select on a different screen. Another issue that I had, but this one only really happens if you're using the thumbsticks to maneuver the screen, is when you click on an object, it brings up the name of the object and then like a menu for like what the different things are. Like if you want to look at it, or if you want to talk to somebody, or if you want to pick something up, if you're able to do that. And when you do that, the cursor actually ends up moving away from the object you originally selected. So it's like the object is on the right, you select it, and the menu pops up a little to the left of it, and the cursor moves with it. And while that may sound like something small, it gets kind of annoying if you want to say, I don't know, you check the object again to try the other option that's on that list of options. Like maybe you just look at it first. Now you want to talk to the, or talk to the person or pick up the object. Then you got to scroll back over to it, press the button again, then scroll down. Small annoyance, but trust me, it becomes a pretty decent annoyance as you're still playing the game, which is why I actually dug up my stylus with the intent of not having to deal with that anymore. The other thing is that while there is a handy like notepad system in the game that just kind of shows like various, you know, objectives that you have to fulfill, there are certain elements of context that are almost lost. Though I'm not going to lie, maybe a small part might be something, like, maybe I missed a detail here and there, but like, there was an early element in the game where I had to find my girlfriend's apartment. Now, there was no mentioning of where her apartment was or the name of the apartment, so it was a bit difficult for me to go, okay, I know I need to go to this building because that's where she lives. Where do I take the train, which is a object, which is a thing you can do. You can take the train to go to different areas of the city. But I was like, okay, where do I take the train, considering I don't know the name of the apartment complex or what area of the city is located in. So it became a bit of, you know, trial and error here and there, and eventually I ended up using an FAQ. There was like a an actual synopsis I ended up using just for that element. I was like, okay, I can just use this to get me past this. I can just move on to the game. But things like that were a bit of an annoyance. But once I was okay with not being concerned about that, because again, once I had access to the walkthrough, when I got stuck, I just looked to the walkthrough to kind of just help me just get back on track. I was able to just kind of progress and enjoy the plot for what it was. And I was okay with it. It helps that, again, the art is beautiful. The music is fantastic. And quite frankly, when it comes to a visual point and click game, those are pretty big deals, since you'll spend a lot of time just navigating windows and menus. So, it's hard to say how I feel regarding a recommendation for the game, though, because the price point
seems like
is
a really unique game.
Yeah, it's really, well, I won't call it unique in the sense of gameplay, because it literally is a point-and-click, you know, visual novel.
I mean, style-wise, like, of it.
Yeah, I was about to say that, but I will say I agree with you there, but the style is nice. It's a beautiful game, and it's visually appealing in a way that I'm not used to seeing a lot of, like, visual novel-type games, and I've played a fair number of them over the last few years, too, because they became surprisingly, they got a bit of a resurgence after, like, Phoenix Wright became a thing, and honestly, I've been kind of indulging, and even with all the ones I've played, I'm really playing when it looks like this one does, and that's a good thing. I feel like ultimately it's a matter of taste in your dollar, or how concerned are you about the dollar amount? Because you mentioned it's $9.99, right?
Yep. So for $10, what is your verdict?
My verdict is, if you're interested in visual novels and the cost really is not of concern to you, it's not a bad run through for a good 3 hours of solid entertainment. But if the cost is of issue to you, then that coupled with the few issues that I did have says wait for a sale at least. But it is worth the playthrough despite the issues I had with it.
Cool. Like, sounds good. And I believe it's actually on sale. It's showing for me that it is on sale for $4.99. I'm not sure how long that sale is going to last, but if you could get it on sale, what do you think of that?
I think it'd be good for $4.99. That's a pickup there.
Awesome. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Sparkle 4 Tales, developed by Megapixel Studio, published by Forever Entertainment, released January 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Begin the emotional journey and start as a small spark of life. Move out of the depths and into bright and peaceful place of grown species. Immerse yourself in the atmospheric surroundings from the beginnings of life and the beautiful soundtrack to complement your experience. Chris, tell us about Sparkle 4 Tales.
Okay, well, this is the latest, of course, in the Sparkle series, which started with Sparkle Zero Genesis, and then the numbering went 2, 0, 2, 3, and now 4, which is interesting. But so these are games that you've probably seen if, like me, you tend to trawl around the eShop looking for deals all the time because they so frequently go on sale. I actually purchased 2 a while ago and just never booted it up. But but for the purposes of the review, I did my research on the series. So the thing that they all have in common is that you basically start as this really minimal little critter, usually, you know, just the tiniest thing, and you go around these stages collecting dots that are basically your food. You have about a 1 second delay between being able to eat them, and then, you know, as the stages progress, your character gets bigger and bigger until eventually it's just this massive, beautiful thing that takes up like half the screen. It's like, it's really cool to see like a late game Sparkle creature. And depending on what, you know, once you start eating larger things that will actually have different, like this is something they started a couple of games ago, but once you eat things that are like some combination of red, blue, or green, it will change your character's, you'll basically evolve into a carnivore, herbivore, or omnivore, which is red, green, and blue, respectively. And then, you know, that gives you, like, different things that you can do and different places you can go, because there's, like, different colored gates that, you know, only a certain color of critter can go through. So what this game kind of adds in is also that every 50 dots that you eat, it will actually bring this little insect buddy that will come in and will help you gather up more of them. So as you're getting close to like other dots, they'll just reach out and grab them for you. And they're minions, basically. They're literally called minions.
Nice.
And the cool thing about this game is that unlike Sparkle Zero, which basically gives you practically no guidance, this game actually has a narrator slash, you know, mentor that identifies itself as the creator. You never see it, but it just says that, you know, I'm the person who created all this mess. And you know, they tell you basically what to do and what everything does, and eventually you get special skills that you can get depending, and you know, they're just different depending on what kind of stuff you've been eating. You start off as a red critter because, you know, and then eventually it kind of branches out from there as you get bigger. Another thing that this game adds, you know, the whole thing is a top down, it almost acts like a twin stick shooter in that, you know, you control this character around a you know, top down view where you get full free range movement, but the other stick only just moves the camera. So this kind of ties into like the whole collecting all the orbs thing. You're instructed to destroy void crystals in every stage, and while you can't do it directly because bumping into walls will quote unquote kill you, I'll come back to the death thing, your minions will actually just automatically sacrifice themselves to destroy these things. So you lose like maybe two or three of them. And then, you know, then you just get more as you collect more dots. Like you can amass like a dozen of these things at least. So, you know, you never really run short of minions unless you, are really bad at games. But, you do have a little bit of a life bar, and like I said, it depletes if you run into walls or enemies or anything like that. You know, once you get skills, then you do actually get enemies that you can, like, you know, slam into or, you know, whatever your move is, you can defeat. But if you lose all of your life, it just takes you to this other level that has a whole bunch of dots in it, like almost like a, you know, Here's where you can replenish yourself or, you know, collect a whole bunch more dots and evolve to be a little stronger so you can take on that level again. But then you, like, have to kind of go through all the stages to get back to that point. So, and I'm sure there are shortcuts and stuff, and I just didn't find them. Because this game has a lot going on visually. Like, that's the biggest draw of the Sparkle games is that they look magnificent. Bright colors, like the whole thing takes place, on like a, you know, in like this alien world looking thing that's also kind of like microscopic. So it just looks like you're in a giant petri dish and, you know, like kind of sludging through primordial ooze and stuff. And, what the fourth chapter adds in is even better. Sometimes you'll actually get to do a, I can only describe it as being like, the camera goes behind the critter. And you actually get to like go through a court, like a preset course, and like try to gather up dots and dodge obstacles from behind, like the Sonic 2 bonus stage, basically.
Ah.
So, you know, you get to do that occasionally, and that's really nice. And if you miss any, you can just go right back to it and just get through it in the normal way, you know, top down way later. So, yeah, like it's basically, you know, the game's all about being kind of calm and such. Like typically, like the Sparkle games are all about like this just being like a, you know, you're just growing your critter until it gets big and then seeing what you got and just enjoying the visuals and the
just like a chill, nice chill zen experience.
Yeah, this game actually brings a little bit more gameplay into it, which I really appreciate. Like I said, they have enemies in it. It has actual like consequences of running into too many walls or enemies or anything like that. And like the, I think as of the, either the second or third game, like, you know, having the different elements sort of determine what kind of creature you'll become, is another interesting facet. And I'm not sure how emotional the story is. They keep saying it's an emotional story. To me, it just seems more like this is just what you're doing. but I actually had a lot of fun with this one. I was zoning out and like, you know, I don't know if I was feeling that zen, but I was definitely digging like the exploration aspect. And of course, gathering up a, whole big old pile of minions and letting them take care of everything for me. So,
well, then for $10, what's your verdict?
$10. I mean, I'd say from what I can tell and what I've seen, this is the best one so far. And this would be a good starting point for you if you want to like really experience something that's more of a game than the first couple of sparkles. But honestly, man, you could pick up all the sparkles for so cheap most of the time. The first two or three games, like, regularly go on sale for like 50 cents. So, if you're looking to get into this series, though, this is a good entry point because it really has a lot of fun going for it. And visually, definitely is the best looking of the bunch. Like I said, those late game critters that take up like half the screen are just magnificent. Like they, you know, look like this Mothra made of crystals. It's just great.
Nice. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Omotomo, developed by Malik Banabdallah. Hopefully I said that right. And Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released January 23rd on the Switch for $9.99. Omotomo is an innovative puzzle game with a single player and cooperative mode taking place in a Zen garden. Pernell, tell us about Omotomo.
Omotomo is a puzzle game that takes place in a Zen garden.
All right, $10. What do you think?
What that was the most eternal review tonight.
What is this actual puzzle game consist of? Or what does it consist of? Well, you are. Well, this is going to be weird because I don't know what the hell these things are. But you are two root creatures who, on each level in the game, the goal of the player is to get them to their respective bowls of water so that they can grow flowers atop their heads.
Okay, that sounds adorable.
Yes. So, movement consists of, well, the play space is a square consistent of, or containing multiple places that they can, like, spaces on it. The heads begin in a specific location, and there are water pitchers within the map itself. And when you move one of the characters, using the left thumbstick for one of them and the right thumbstick for the other, they jut off in the direction that you press until they hit a wall. And you have to utilize both of them. Oh, and they also, of course, leave a trail behind. So the head, as it leaves the starting point, leaves an extended, like, neck trail. Yes, a root. It's called a root. It leaves a root trail behind it. So what ends up happening is, like, if you do that and then send the other head going in the direction of where it came from, it'll crash and collide, thereby having its progress impeded. So there will be a number of levels where you kind of want to move one of the heads in a direction so that the next one can stop one row or column short of where it would have otherwise, so that you can actually sort of control and direct where the head is going. And then ultimately, of course, you're going to utilize that feature to get each head to its respective water bowl so that the flower can grow and you can move on. As you progress with the game, though, of course, they add a few more caveats to the puzzling to make it a little more difficult. Like, there might be objects that can pretty much be passed through once or something, or there might be an object where, like, it's like a root or a tree branch that's stuck in the middle of the map. So now all of a sudden, even though the grid is like a 16x16, the 14th tile and the 13th row might be blocked. So now you have to figure out how to get around that, sliding areas and things like that nature. So they make the game a little bit more difficult. And eventually it's funny because they designed the game to be like zen and relaxing. But as it gets harder, being a puzzle game, forget that. You know, relaxing with nothing. But that's kind of the nature of a decent puzzle game anyway. If every level was cake and easy, what the hell is the point of playing it in the first place? So, honestly, the game is enjoyable. I had fun with it, and I was fine with it. It's weird, though, because I feel like I have to inevitably compare it to another game that exists on the system, in which case I think you should buy this one and that game, which is a game I reviewed years ago, actually, called Puzzle Puppers, which was a very similar take on it, where you were colorful dogs that could elongate.
Puzzle Puppers.
You remember Puzzle Puppers?
Hell yeah, I remember Puzzle Puppers.
That game was adorable as balls. But it was a very similar premise. You had one to like four dogs that could stretch, and their goal for those games was to get the dog to its respective water dish. So same logic, you can block things, you can block the dogs off to kind of control the path they could take. There were like different obstacles that could tweak around. Some of those obstacles, which is this in Onitomo too. Get the name off. It's like Omotomo area. They just in that game too. So it's a very similar style of gameplay, which ultimately results in more stages with a different theme for the gameplay style that you're already likely to enjoy because you're enjoying this one. So my vote on this game is to buy both this and Puzzle Puppers. But if you can only afford one, then I'm okay with you buying this one too. But seriously, get Puzzle Puppers too.
They're both quality. It helps, this one is also on sale. As of the time we're recording this, it is on sale for $4.99 instead of $9.99. And I noticed Sparkle was on sale as well. I'm not sure if that's a situation where you get discounts if you own other Forever titles, which is possible. I know some developers and publishers do that. But check if they're on sale, and if they are, save a couple of bucks while you're at it.
Oh, yeah. But overall, it's definitely fun. Like, I am fond of the fact that more Puzzle games are making an appearance, because it always gives me something to do when I'm on the camp.
Wow. How's nice. That for a box quote?
Well, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Giant jar of Cajun peanuts that are in a can that I haven't opened up yet. So I just like to sit on it while I just hang out and relax and think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's exactly what you meant.
That's exactly what I meant. I'll take a photo of the can. It's a giant can of Cajun peanuts.
Please don't take a picture of it.
I'm sure there's a can full of nuts, all right.
Delicious.
I want to show you my nuts.
They're Cajun. They're spicy.
Taste them. They're good. Little salty.
I've heard that story before.
Oh man, well that is it for this episode. Thanks all of you for being here. It was
Thank
a good
you.
One.
It was
a good one. We had fun. We talked. It was a good time. Mm-hmm. We talked about hating donuts.
They are awful. That's a
fallacy. Had to get one more in. Had to do it.
And then quail eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Also delicious. Much better tasting than salty nuts.
As delicious as electric phalluses. What are you doing, Cole?
I don't have to explain myself to anybody, Pernell. It's 2020.
Now, if it was 2019, you guys would explain it.
You are 2.5 months too late.
Damn it. Maybe 2.5 months.
Uh-huh. That's how you redneck math it.
I'm going to say holler. How are we doing it? Holler.
Time's different around these parts.
God dang it.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, my Lord. Anybody have any final words to end the show?
Yeah.
Conversation.
I'm just going to say that the SML podcast has been brought to you by Gilson B. Pontes. We'll be right back.